Okay, this week's parsha. This parsha is Beshalach. And I'm going to share with you a very interesting approach to that will carry us through practically the whole parsha, touching on all the different parts of the parsha. And this is based on an essay from Rabbi Ari Kahn. So page 366, Pasuk Yud Zayin, the first Pasuk in the parsha, first verse 17. Vayehi b'shalach paro yasa'am, and it was when Paro sent out the nation, v'nachama lo kem derech eretz plishtim, Hashem did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, ki karev hu, for it was close, meaning, if they would have gone the direction of the land of the Philistines, that would have been the closest way into Israel. But Hashem didn't do so. Ki amar lekim, for Hashem said, pen yirachem ha'am, lest the nation regret, b'r'oisem al-chama, when they see war, v'shavim mitzrayma, and they will return to Mitzrayim, to return to Egypt. Meaning, Hashem was saying, Hashem realized that if the Jewish people go by the way of the Philistines, that would have to be the first engagement of war they'd have to be involved in entering the land of Israel. And basically, they weren't ready for it. If they'd see war, they would regret leaving and turn around and go back to Mitzrayim. So what we see here is that even after the Jewish people experienced the 10 plagues, and they left Egypt, and the point of the plagues and the point of the miracles leaving Egypt was to instill within the Jewish people a very clear belief in God and a very clear belief that God is involved in the world. God has not just created a world and let it go, but rather He pays attention to what's going on in the world, proof being that look what He did for the Jewish people to get them out of Egypt. So even after all the miracles that they saw and the belief in God that they had, to have to now go from that into engaging in war, they wouldn't handle it. They have perceived their relationship with Hashem in a very supernatural way. Hashem has saved them from their enemies through unbelievable miracles. But now, if they'd have to engage in war, they'd have to now engage in something very natural, very mundane. And that's not the relationship that they have. That's not the relationship the Jewish people had so far with Hashem, to be involved in such a very natural process, and to still be able to have the faith that Hashem would help them through that. They weren't there yet. The miracles were great. The miracles showed there is a God, and God pays attention to the world. They have a relationship with God, but so far their perception of the relationship with God, vis-a-vis their enemies, is one of a very supernatural nature. Okay, now, if we turn a few pages, and this is page 374, Perek Tesvav, Pasuk, Lamed Aleph, chapter 14, verse 31, which is describing the Jewish people after the splitting of the Red Sea. The splitting of the Red Sea is a miracle that we have been davening every single day. We talk about every single day. We say the Shiras Hayom, we say Az Yashir every single day. Our sages tell us that what the Jewish people, even what a maidservant experienced at the splitting of the Red Sea, the greatest of the prophet, Yechezkel, Mabuzi, the prophet Ezekiel, who the heavens opened up to him, and he saw everything that goes on in the heavens, the highest levels in the heavens. A maidservant at the splitting of the Red Sea was revealed even more than that. So it was a tremendous, tremendous experience. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayar Yisrael Sada Gdela, Israel saw the great hand, Asher Asah Hashem Mitzrayim, that God had performed in Egypt. Vayiram Es Hashem, the nation feared God, and they believed in God and in Moshe his servant. So, just reading these words, which many of the commentaries have difficulty with, it sounds from here that until now, they didn't fully believe in Hashem, or they didn't fully believe in Moshe. Something happened at the splitting of the Red Sea that now brought them to this complete level of belief. Perhaps you could say it's based on the revelations that took place there. Rabbi Kahn wants to suggest that the uniqueness of the splitting of the Red Sea which again was a, which you could say was the basic uniqueness of the splitting of the Red Sea, which was then so to, which was then would be the foundation for all the other revelations that took place there, perhaps. But he wants to suggest that the basic uniqueness of the splitting of the Red Sea was that we know that Paro claimed himself a god of the Nile. The Nile was their source of sustenance. I believe many commentaries say they worshipped the Nile. Paro himself, the Pharaoh, claimed that he created the Nile, he's a god of the Nile. And therefore, water played a very important lesson, very, very important place in the eyes of the Egyptians. And the truth is, the first time they saw God's power over the Nile was the plague of blood, right? The Nile was smitten and it turned into blood. But in essence, the Jewish people, until the splitting of the Red Sea, as we find in the commentary of the Sephorno in, I think it's last week's Parsha, the Jewish people, until the Red Sea, the miracle of the Red Sea, were always still afraid of the Egyptians. They always thought the Egyptians would come back after them. And Rabbi Kahn suggests that the splitting of the Red Sea was the final, call it the final nail in the coffin of the Jewish people's consideration of the power of the god of the Nile in their minds of Paro. The experience of the 10 plagues was to get the Jewish people out of the influence of the Egyptian pagan worship, to bring them to the belief in the one God who truly created the world, who created the world. And there was this process going on. So even after all the plagues had taken place, there was still this, but in the deep in their conscience, there was still a question, or still a certain level of doubt, or a certain level of fear, that perhaps there is still this god of water, the power of the god of water is still something that has some kind of a power, some kind of a strength, even with the belief in God. And now having the Nile actually drown the Egyptians and drown their enemies and serve them, it was clear to them now the complete power of Hashem. Hashem's power now was complete in their minds. There was no more question in what the power of Hashem is, even regarding water. Even regarding water that would seem to be such a powerful force in the eyes of the Egyptians, and thus influencing the Jewish people's deep-seated beliefs, this splitting of the Red Sea now there was no more doubt about the power of Hashem over all powers in the world. Hashem was the one and only true power. There were no other powers. And this was the uniqueness of the splitting of the Red Sea. And perhaps it was based on that that all these other revelations were able to take place. But he wants to say that the splitting of the Red Sea was now completing the process of how the Jewish people would have their complete faith and understanding in the power of the one Hashem. Okay. Now, but he points out something very, very interesting. And that is, for that, we'll have to turn back and take a look back on page 370. Which is Perek Yudala, chapter 14, Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15. Vayimer Hashem el Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Matitzak Eloi, why are you crying out to me? Da'aber al b'nei Yisrael v'yisoh, speak to the children of Israel, and they shall travel. Va'ata and you, Horeim esmatcha, lift up your staff, unetei esotcha v'yam uvaka'eyu, and stretch out your hand over the sea and split it. V'yavayu b'nei Yisrael b'seichayim v'yabash, and the Jewish people shall enter into the sea on dry land. Okay, skip now to page 372. Look at Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21. Vayet Moshe es yadoi al hayam. Moshe stretched out his hand over the sea. Vayelech Hashem es hayam. And Hashem then now led the sea. Baruch kodem azav kol halayla, with a strong eastern wind the entire night. Vayasem es hayam lecharava, and it made the sea into dry land. Vayibaku hamayim, the water split. So Rabbi Kahn points out something very interesting. In Pasuk Tes Zayin, it says, lift up your staff and stretch out your hand. And in Pasuk Chav Aleph, when it actually happens, it says, and Moshe stretched out his hand. We know that Moshe did the ten plagues, there was a staff, right? Hashem gave Moshe a staff, and the staff had been used for bringing the plagues. At least some of them. Now here, Hashem tells Moshe to raise your staff and stretch out your hand. And then it says Moshe stretched out his hand. So the question here is that why it sounds like, or it's possible that it sounds like, that is Moshe using the staff here, or is he using his hand? I mean, Hashem could have said, take your staff and stretch it over the, and stretch it and extend it over the sea. Then it could say, and Moshe extended his staff over the sea. But it doesn't say that. It says he extended his hand. So, to be honest, I did not look up in the Mefarshim, in the Chumash, to see if they talk about this. But he wants to suggest that what's happening here is actually two things. Moshe is told to lift up his staff. But what he's actually stretching his... What is he stretching over the sea? His hand. And over here, we have that Moshe extends his hand over the sea, and the entire night you've got this strong eastern wind blowing that's involved in bringing about the splitting of the Red Sea, which the commentaries talk about. The involvement of the wind in the splitting of the Red Sea. Wind being involved in the splitting of the Red Sea doesn't make less of a miracle. There's a certain piece of nature that's included, but it doesn't take away from the miracle. But here it's different. But there's a different, very big difference here between this miracle and the miracles of 10 plagues. That again, the 10 plagues are with the staff. This miracle is with his hand. Those miracles are instantaneous. You know, Moshe hits Aaron hits the Nile, turns into blood. Aaron hits the Nile, comes out a frog. It's an instantaneous. All the other miracles, when they happened. Whatever happened to bring them about was performed, the miracle happened. Here, Moshe is doing the act that is supposed to, you know, bring about the splitting of the Red Sea. The miracle is performed through that act, but it doesn't happen right away. It's not instantaneous as before. And therefore, he suggests that the splitting of the Red Sea was meant to be the beginning of a process for the Jewish people. The Jewish people were not meant to live forever with supernatural miracles. They're supposed to enter Eretz Yisrael and live in Eretz Yisrael in a natural form. A natural form, again, with a very unique providence of Hashem, but they were supposed to live a natural life in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, there was now a process that had to start, that the Jewish people should now go from perceiving a relationship with Hashem through supernatural means, and now be taught how to live with Hashem with the natural means. A person can't live in a constant state of miracles, because that would not be the proper state of Bechira. That would not be the proper state of free will that a person has to live with, right? Our goal in life is to live with free will, with the ability to choose between right and wrong, and to make the right choice, and through that is how we merit our closeness with Hashem, and the eventual eternal closeness with Hashem. So therefore, the Jewish people, again, had to start off with the supernatural miracles. They had to start with these miracles that would help them have a true understanding and belief in Hashem. But now, once they left Egypt, there now had to be a process of getting them, kind of weaning them off these kind of miracles. And the first part of that process was the fact that no more staff, Moshe's hand, doesn't explain necessarily what the symbolism in that is, but it's a change. It's a beginning of it. It's a new way of doing it. And it's not instantaneous. Again, it's a change from what was before. And perhaps we can even say the fact that the wind was involved is already a certain level of nature getting involved. Okay? All right. So this is step number one in Hashem's plan of getting the Jewish people into a different mode of relationship with Hashem. Okay, so we have the Jewish people sing the song of praise to Hashem. Now let's turn to page 380. I just want to point out also that it's interesting that Rav Shamshon Lefol Hirsch at this part of the parsha also talks about how each episode after Oz Yashir is an episode of the Jewish people learning more and more about how their relationship with Hashem is meant to be. Okay, so now Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22. Vayasa Moshe Yisrael miYamsuf. Moshe made the Jewish people travel from Yamsuf. Vayetzu Amidbar Shur. They went out to the desert of Shur. Vayelchu Shleish Yisrael Amidbar. They went 3 days in the desert. Vayematzu Mayim, and they did not find water. Vayavayu Marasa. Now, interestingly, Rabbi Kahn points out, we're going to have an episode with water at the end of the parasha too. And over there, we're going to see that there it says the Jewish people complain. No, doesn't say that there. I'm going to back off of that. Okay. Let's continue on. Pasuk 23. They came to Mara. They weren't able to drink the water from Mara, for they were bitter. The waters were bitter. Alkein krashma Mara, and therefore they called its name Mara. So the nation complained to Moshe, saying, "What are we going to drink?" Okay, so listen to this question. If you were in a desert, and you had no water, and you came upon a body of water, and the water was bitter, would you drink it?
You can't. Right.
You can't? Sure. Who says you can't? If you were in a desert and you were thirsty and you had no water, you wouldn't drink bitter water? Doesn't say it was poisonous.
It's
bitter. It's bitter. If you need water in a desert and you find bitter water, you're not going to drink it?
It's acid or it's basically you can't drink it.
How do you can't you drink it?
You go like drinking salt water. You're not going to.
Wait a minute. But that's the question, though. The question is, though, that again, if you're in a desert, you're 3 days, you have no water, okay, and you come upon bitter water, okay, so you can make an argument, you drink it, it's bitter, but you drink it because otherwise you're gonna die of thirst.
This might kill you too.
Maybe.
So you can make an argument that they would have if they could have.
Maybe they should have. Maybe they should have. So he wants to say like this, Rabbi Kahn. He wants to say that what was happening here was that the Jewish people, when they were searching for water, and they're complaining about the water, this water is bitter, we don't want to drink it, what are we going to drink? He wants to say that really what was coming, their complaint about the water, really wasn't about water. Wasn't about water per se, but it was about what they had experienced at the Red Sea with the water. Meaning, they wanted miracles. They wanted a miracle. When they now came and they didn't find there was no water, you know what they wanted? They wanted Hashem to perform a miracle for them. They want to go back. They want that relationship. That's the relationship they understand. They understand the relationship of miracle with Hashem. And therefore, when there's a problem here with the water, okay, they're complaining in the sense their complaint is really about going back to that, to what they experienced at the water of the Red Sea, where they had a supernatural miracle, they had that miraculous relationship with Hashem, that's what they wanted. So what did Hashem do? Go back. Page 382, Pasuk Chaf Hei, verse 25. Vayitzak al Hashem, so Moshe cried out to Hashem. Vayirei Hashem eitz, Hashem showed him a piece of wood, a tree, a branch. Vayashleich al Hamoyim, he threw it into the water. Vayimtiku Hamoyim, the water became sweet. Sham sam leichok, komishpa v'sham niso, there He placed for him a statute of judgment, and there he tested it. Okay. So Hashem showed him a piece of wood, and he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. Was that a miracle?
Yeah.
I think according to some of Farshim, it wasn't a miracle.
It was or wasn't?
According to some, it was not a miracle. According to some. I didn't look up the Ramban, but he brings down the Ramban that seems to say that it was not necessarily a miracle. Or maybe a minute. I can't say for sure. Okay? But we do know that there are midrashim that say that what was the point of this piece of wood sweetening the water? What was the lesson there to the Jewish people? That the tree represents what?
Prayer.
No. That the tree represents Torah. Eitz chayim hi lama chazikim ba. It is the tree of life for those who grab onto it. That's meaning Torah. Torah is compared to a tree. And throwing the tree into the water and making the water sweet was actually meant to be a lesson to show them that what's going to take care of your needs, when it take care of your needs, is Torah. Which means, according to his whole theme, is that the Jewish people, deep down, their expression, their desire for the sweet water was really a desire, an expression of that they need that relationship with Hashem, that supernatural relationship. Again, there's a problem here. Maybe there is water. The water is bitter. It's not a good situation. This is not a situation that they're used to dealing with Hashem. And it's really, and their expression of desire for water was an expression for their desire for supernatural relationship with Hashem, for the supernatural. So what does Hashem show them? The way that you're going to have a relationship with me is through Torah. It's going to be through Torah. And this piece of wood, right? He wants to suggest again. Wood, staff, right? A staff is made out of wood. But a piece of wood is the natural state of the staff. The staff is already the processed wood. And that was meant to bring out to them that you are meant to live in a natural world, and you will continue your relationship with Hashem through Torah. So what was in essence a complaint on the part of the Jewish people, perhaps on the surface a complaint for better water, deep down a desire for the supernatural that they were used to, which again was their last experience with water, and Hashem says, nope, that's not the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be, your relationship to me is supposed to be through Eitz, through the Eitz Chaim, through the tree of life. Well, that's what it says. Good point. Sham samlei chayk umishpat. He gave them some mitzvahs. At that point, Hashem gave them some mitzvahs, so that they should start already that relationship with Torah. So they started the relationship, and the lesson was, soon you're going to receive the Torah at Har Sinai, which they knew, and that would be the main mode, that is the remote of relationship through which they have the relationship with Hashem. Okay. Now, let's now skip down a few verses. Pasuk Beis, Perek Tes Zayin, chapter 16, verse 2. The entire assembly of the children of Israel complained against Moshe and Aaron in the desert. The children of Israel said to them, if only we would have died in the hands of God in the land of Egypt. When we set over a pot of meat, when we ate bread to be satisfied, that you have taken out this, that you have taken us out to this desert, to kill this entire assembly with famine. Basically, there was no food. Right? The Jewish people had no food. So what happened? They now came complaining back to Moshe. They came complaining. You know, again, this is the Jewish people. They're in a learning process. They're developing. It's a developmental process of their relationship with Hashem. They find themselves in another situation of lacking their physical needs, And again, it's not something that they had really had any experience with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. I mean, you already tried telling them your relationship with me is through Torah. Wasn't it there right now? That wasn't, apparently they had not internalized that enough. And now when they found another challenge to their physical existence, they complained. Okay. So what is the response to that complaint? The response to that complaint is, without reading through all the psukim, man. The manna. The special, the heavenly food that fell down to them from heaven. So you could learn that, okay, they were in a desert, and they needed food, and Hashem sent them down the man. And the lesson of the man, which the Torah tells us later is the man, is that our sustenance comes from Hashem. Very simple. But there's actually two other very important lessons that came out of the man. Two very important lessons. One lesson was a lesson in emunah and bitachon, in faith in Hashem and trust in Hashem. The Jewish people were only allowed to collect for that day. The Jewish people were only allowed to collect the specific amount that they needed and not more. And even if they tried to collect more, what did they end up with? No. The same. Nothing more than what they needed. That was a lesson in faith and trust in Hashem. Comes Friday. What happens on Friday? Double portion of man. No man on the seventh day. No man on Shabbos. This was a lesson in the day of Shabbos. So here Rabbi Kahn says, this is the next step in the process. Next step in the process. They've already been told that their relationship is going to be through Torah. And here they come and they're complaining about their sustenance. Where is it going to come from? Hashem shows them. Hashem does a miracle for them. Supernatural miracle. Nothing to talk about. A clear miracle. He shows them. He understands what they need. He understands their weakness. He gives them the miracle. But in the miracle, he teaches them another lesson. He teaches them another lesson about their sustenance. About this sustenance that, again, is part of the natural order of things. He teaches them another lesson that they need to understand. They need to understand the lesson of Shabbos. The lesson of Shabbos is a lesson itself in our faith and trust in Hashem. That Hashem tells us to stop doing everything and we know we're not going to lose out from it. But it also is the day in which we sanctify everything that we do. Shabbos is a day where Hashem says you take your world and you sanctify it in my name. You're not going ahead and working, you're not living your regular lives, but rather you're taking everything that you do and you're elevating it. You're sanctifying it to Hashem. It's the lesson to the Jewish people here was that their physical, natural world that they're going to be entering into, your mission through the Torah is to sanctify the mundane. To take the regular natural world and to elevate it and to sanctify it. Okay? This natural world that you are meant to live in, not the supernatural world, but the natural world that you're meant to live in, is meant to be a world in which, again, your relationship will be through the medium of Torah, and you will be taking that natural world and you will be elevating it in the service of Hashem. So again, the Jewish people need the supernatural miracle to awaken them, to instill in them the lesson, but the lesson that's there, or the opportunity of a lesson that comes now from their complaint, the lesson that's now given to them for them to internalize is that this natural world that they're going to live in is meant to be a world that they sanctify in the service of Hashem, which is what Shabbos represents. Okay. So they've had the lesson of the tree in the water, which is a lesson of Torah. They've had the lesson of the man, which is a lesson of trust and faith in Hashem and Shabbos. Okay, and after the lesson of the man, well, after the story of the man, what happens? Look on page 388. Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph, chapter 17, verse 1. The entire assembly of the children of Israel traveled from the desert of Sin to their travels, to their journeys, Alpi Hashem, by the command of Hashem. And they encamped in Rephidim. There was no water to give the nation to drink. Okay, they're back to the problem that they faced at the beginning. They're lacking water. What happens? Vayarev Ha'am Imosha. The nation begins to quarrel with Moshe. Give us water so we can drink. Moshe says to them, why are you quarreling with me? Why are you testing God? They're falling back. They're falling back to where they were in the beginning. The lesson about how Torah is, they're supposed to live their lives through Torah. The lesson of the man, it hasn't been internalized. The nation thirsted there for water. They complained to Moshe. Why did you take us out from Egypt? Lahamis, Oisiv, Esbonai, Kumi and my children, Vesmiknai and my cattle, Batsama, thirst. Vayitzak Moshe Hashem Leimar. Moshe cries out to Hashem. Ma'aseh lamazeh. What shall I do for this nation? Oid marad skaluni. In a little bit, they're going to stone me. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Avar lefnei ha'am. Pass before the people. Vekach itcha mezikna Yisrael, and take with you from the elders of Israel. Umatcha shirakisa bayas hayar. Kach biyatcha balachta. And the staff with which you smote the Nile, take with your hand and go. The staff. We're back to the staff. Hineni oimed lefanecha shama latsur b'chayrev. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Chayrev. V'ikisa batsur. You're going to hit the rock. V'yatsumai mimena v'shasa ha'am. Water will come out of it and the nation will drink. V'yas kein Moshe le'inei ziknei Yisrael. Moshe did so in front of the elders of Israel. Here, Moshe had to revert back to the staff. The staff that was used by the plagues, now Moshe is going back. Vayikra Shema Mokim Masa Meriva, and he called that place Masa Meriva, Ariv B'nei Yisrael, on the quarreling with the Jewish people, Ba'anaseisim as Hashem Lamar, and for their testing Hashem, saying, Hayesh Hashem Bekerbenu Imayin as Hashem in our midst, or not. So look how far the Jewish people fell back. That when they were challenged now with the water, after everything that had taken place until now, how far did they go?
Backwards.
Hayesh Hashem b'kerbeinu. Was Hashem really with us? Hashem really with us? Again, they're facing a challenge that they had not seen before, and they're saying, what's going on? Is Hashem really with us? Again, they're having a very hard time in internalizing these lessons that Hashem wanted them to learn about how they're going to learn to live in the natural world with Hashem. And unfortunately, not only that, internalizing it, they're even questioning now, is Hashem in our midst? Is Hashem really going to be part? Is Hashem really part of our lives? In the supernatural, we saw that. But without the supernatural, we're not really seeing it enough. We're not really seeing it. Even with the man and even with everything, but each time they're going ahead and they're meeting a challenge, they're not able. The lessons that Hashem means to give them, they're not internalizing. And not only that, they're complaining and they're saying, "Is Hashem really with us?" So the fact that they are now reverting back to that level also now dictates that what's Moshe now going to do the miracle with? Do it with a staff. It's going back to the way things were in Egypt. Okay, but Hashem does it. Hashem gives them the water. Hashem answers them and shows them, I am with you. What happens next? Next pasuk, Ches. Vayavoy Amalek. Vayelochem Yisrael b'Rephidim. Comes Amalek, and Amalek makes war in Rephidim. Okay, there is a clear connection between Amalek coming to fight a war with the Jewish people and what just happened with the Jewish people. The Jewish people say, is Hashem in our midst or not? And who then comes? Amalek. So Rashi has a famous parable to a man that's carrying his son on his shoulder, protecting his son all the time. And then his son meets up with someone and says, you saw my father? And the father says, that's how you look at me? And the father puts him down and a dog bites him. So that's the Jewish people say, is Hashem with us? Comes Amalek. So he brings a very interesting explanation between the connection between Amalek coming after the Jewish people are saying, is Hashem in our midst? Comes Amalek. So he makes the following connection. For this, we gotta turn all the way now to Parshas Kisetze in Devarim. Then the Parshas Kisetze. This is page 1066. Perek Chafei, chapter 25, Pasuk Yizayin, verse 17, top of the page. Okay. Zachar Eis Asher Aselocha Amalek. Remember that which Amalek did to you, Baderech Betzeischem in Mitzrayim, on the way when you left Egypt. Asher Korcha Baderech, that he happened upon you on the way. Rashi says Asher Korcha, the first interpretation of Rashi with this word Asher Korcha, Rashi says Lashon Mikra. It's a wording that expresses coincidence. Shasha Karcha Baderech, who happened upon you on the way, which is a very interesting way of saying who met you on the way. And the Reb Tzadik HaKayim Lublin, the famous Hasidic Rebbe and thinker, Reb Tzadik HaKayim, explains, and many commentaries point this out, that the fact that the Torah describes Amalek as Karcha Baderech, he happened upon you on the way, is meant to bring out that the philosophy of Amalek was, is that everything is coincidence. There is no providence of Hashem in the world. Everything is just natural, it just happens. There is no providence of Hashem in the world. And Asher Karcha Baderech means to say when Amalek attacked the Jewish people, their attack was meant to take away their belief in Hashem's running of the world, and to impose upon them, with their actions, this philosophy of the world is just coincidence, just a natural order, and that's it. This works very well with what we're saying right now. The Jewish people say, Hayesh Hashem b'kerbein amayin, is Hashem in our midst? Is Hashem with us in this natural order of things? So, they complained. What did Hashem send to them next? He sent to them Amalek. Their enemy now attacked them. The enemy that was meant to actually, the enemy who meant to impress upon them this idea, their complaint, is Hashem really with us or not? Now Hashem sent on them an enemy that was truly going to challenge them in that way. Amalek meant to impress that upon the Jewish people. Chazal say that no one wanted to touch the Jewish people. Amalek came, they were the first ones, and they basically broke the ice. Or according to the way the Medrash compares it, is to a boiling cauldron. No one, of course, too hot to go in. One Meshuggah jumps in, and he burns himself. But what does he do now? He cooled it off. Now everybody else can go in. Amalek was the Meshuggah that jumped into the boiling cauldron because he was going to get whacked. But he had a purpose. His purpose was to cool it off. His purpose was to cool off everything that Hashem had done for the Jewish people. He meant to put water on it. He meant to put out that flame. And that was now the way Hashem now said to the Jewish people, you question my providence, you question am I in your midst? Now I'm going to send upon you an enemy that's going to try to impress that upon you. And how are you going to have to deal with that enemy? How are you going to have to deal? What's going to be your tshuva? What do you need to do now in this situation? So turn to page 392. Actually, no. Let's just go back to page 390, the next verse, Pasuk Tes, last two words on the page. Okay. Vayoyimei Moshe. And Moshe said, El Yeshua to Yeshua, V'chalonu Anoshim, choose for us men and go make war with Amalek. Machar anoich nitzavarei shagiva, tomorrow I will be sitting atop of the hill, umateyo aleikim biyadi, and the staff of God will be in my hand. Vayas Yeshua kasher meloi moish lochem Amalek. Yeshua did as Moshe told him to wage war against Amalek. Umaisha Aaron v'chor alu reishagiva. Maisha Aaron and Chor went up to the top of the hill. V'haya kashayar Maisha yada yivagavar Yisrael. And when Moshe lifted his hand, Yisrael was victorious. V'kasha yoniach yadoi v'gavar Amalek, and when he put his hand down, then Amalek would be stronger. So there's a famous mission, Rosh Hashanah, that says, what is it? Moshe's hand makes war, his hand goes up, they win, his hand goes down, they lose. What's going on? Says the Mishnah, when Moshe lifts up his hand, that is when the Jewish people are looking up to Hashem, and they are subjugating their will, themselves to Hashem. That's when they're stronger than Amalek. Moshe puts hand down his hand, which means then the Jewish people are not looking up to Hashem. That is when Amalek overpowers them. Okay? Says Rabbi Kahn, now look, what are we talking about now? We have a hand involved. There's the hand. There's the staff, and there's the hand again. Here again, Moshe is trying to impress upon the Jewish people, now we're going back. We got to go back. We have to stop thinking that our relationship is only one of the staff, one of a supernatural nature. Things have to change. And the Jewish people really did have to change, because right now, they were engaging in war. Now they really had to engage in the natural. Until now, they were complaining, and Hashem responded each time with a miracle. But now Hashem is telling them, you fell back so far that you said, is Hashem in our midst or not? That's how far you fell back. So now you're going to face an enemy that wants to impress that upon you, and you're going to have to show that it's not that way. You're going to have to now be able, in the midst of a war, in the midst of this very natural, mundane endeavor of war, you're going to have to look up to Hashem, and within that, you're going to have to put your trust in Hashem and see Hashem and have a relationship with Hashem. And when you can do that, that will be when you have now made up for your saying, is Hashem in our midst or not. But it's all part of the process of the Jewish people being, so to speak, weaned off their relationship of supernatural miracles with Hashem, to be able to live a natural life with the Torah, sanctifying their natural world in the service of Hashem, and living with Hashem in that state of being. And at the end of the day, what happened? Came the Meraglim. Again, they faced this problem of how to deal with their enemies in Eretz Yisrael. And again, unfortunately, they failed. And at that point, Hashem says, you're not ready. You're not ready for Eretz Yisrael. You're going to have to go through 40 years. 40 years of miracles again. But 40 years that will help you internalize the fact that your relationship with me has to be one in Eretz Yisrael, through the Torah, in a natural way of living. That's what you need to do. And what Hashem was trying to do was give them the opportunities to internalize these lessons, to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael right away. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. And in essence, what's happening here at the beginning of the Jewish people being formed into a nation is really the struggle of man throughout human history. Adam Harishon, Hashem gave him a plan. Hashem gave him plan A. A plus.
One plan.
Plan A, there was one plan, and if Adam would have taken that plan, everything would have been fine. Well, he had his bechira, he had his free will, he misused it, and now there has to be a whole new process. Now there's going to have to be a whole new process of Adam having children, or of the generations following Adam, and eventually through Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, building up the possibility of bringing mankind back to where they were supposed to be, how the world was supposed to be created, with the receiving of the Torah. There was a process for that. That process took the Jewish people to slavery from Egypt. They had to now be taken out with miracles, and again, be taught the lessons of Hashem's existence and Hashem's providence. And now again, they were going through now Hashem was giving them the process by which they could go and receive the Torah and enter Eretz Yisrael and be who they were supposed to be. Unfortunately, again, Hashem had his plan. He gave us the plan, and through our free will, we did not fulfill the plan, and therefore, there was plan B. Plan B or plan C, whichever plan letter you want to give it, which is now 40 years in the desert. After 40 in the desert, they're back into Eretz Yisrael. And that's, again, a plan. What's going to happen in Eretz Yisrael?
Same thing.
And unfortunately, that didn't work either. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gives man the means by which to perfect himself, the means by which to elevate himself. But man has free will, which is what life is about, and we fail. But even when we fail, The Rebbeinu Shlomo still gives us another plan to eventually bring us to the point of where we will reach that level that we can be one with him for eternity.